The Police Federation official podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Police Federation official podcast. As ever, your opportunity as members to get those questions and issues out there to the National Chairman and, of course, over the weeks, a variety of guests. We do this, of course, in the 100th year since the Federation began. Lots of topics over these episodes to get into, from pensions to pay, campaigns to conduct, all on the agenda. I should also remind you, of course, that any points you would like to add in, then you can do so via Twitter or email. We'll include as many as we possibly can in future episodes. Alongside John Apter, the National Chair for the Police Federation, on this episode, Peggy Lamont is with us, National Board Member and Lead in Equality for the Police Federation. Welcome to you both. John, firstly, it's been, every time we speak, you've had an incredible sort of busy time in the build-up to each episode. Let's just take a moment to talk about driving here, because this has been absolutely key as part of an issue the Federation have been talking about for a long, long time. Just explain what the story is and what's since happened.
Absolutely. Thanks a lot, Ian. Yeah, the driving for pursuits and response are our members, those police officers who are trained, highly trained in driving matters, have been legally vulnerable for far too long. I mean, and it's been over 7 years now, 7 years that the Police Federation has been campaigning to bring about a change in the law to give better protection to those who are trained in emergency driving. And this isn't about saying that drivers, police drivers, can do as they please. There's still accountability. But at the moment, their training is not taken into account whatsoever. And that's perverse. So they are judged as any other driver.
So just for anyone listening to this who's not a police officer, doesn't know this part of the law, if you're on an emergency call, you have blue light, siren, you're going down the street, you're chasing, you know, one of the bad guys, as it were, something happens, then that officer at that point is treated in exactly the same as I would be.
Absolutely.
There is no consideration that this person has gone through, you know, some robust training. All of that becomes irrelevant in a court of law.
Absolutely. And what we look at is the definition of dangerous driving, and that is where the driving would fall far below that of expected of a careful and competent motorist. So when you look at a police vehicle, or indeed an ambulance or a fire engine, on an emergency run, then I say to people, take away the stripes, take away the lights, the sirens. Imagine it's just a Tesco's delivery van, or Asda, or Waitrose, any other,
Many are available.
Absolutely. And treat them all the same. That's how we are compared. And that is perverse. So the Police Federation has been working tirelessly for this. And certainly over recent years, Tim Rogers, our pursuit lead, has lived and breathed this and done an immense amount of work. And only last week, the Home Secretary issued a ministerial statement of intent, which was in effect supporting a change in legislation which would give officers better protection. Now, some people have said to me, because sometimes we just can't win, and some people have said, well, that's not enough, you need a change in legislation. I agree, but to have a ministerial statement of support from the Home Secretary is significant. Yeah. It really does push us further along this journey. But my plea now to the MPs, to the Home Secretary, to others, is we have to find the time, the legislative time, to bring about this change. Because without that, all we have is a letter giving us some nice warm words.
And when you hear the individual stories of officers who've been caught up through no fault of their own, but have found themselves on the rough end of this, the current legislation, you think, well, what parliamentarian would look at those kind of stories and think, I shouldn't do anything about this?
Indeed. And most of the MPs I've spoken to are 100% supportive. And those officers, Ian, you're right, when they are investigated, their lives are turned upside down, both professionally and privately. What they're saying to me and others is, I was doing what I was trained to do. No more, no less. I was doing what I was expected of me and what I was trained to do. And for that, I am either being investigated for misconduct matters, or they end up in a Crown Court. Sure. That's just wrong, and it's got to change.
So things are moving.
They are moving. We are
getting there. It's not a swift process, is it?
No, it's not as swift as
the parliamentary system.
No, it's not. But we are getting there.
Sure.
And, you know, I thank our colleagues for their support, and indeed the public. The public are sensible when it comes to things like this, and they are very much behind us.
On the last episode, on the Police Federation podcast, I think, revealed for the first time at that point about what was happening with the Dorchester Hotel. Now, this is where, of course, the Police Bravery Awards have historically taken place for many years, and you made a big decision. Just to explain for those who didn't see this story what happened and what action you took.
Well, you're right. This is a big event in the Police Federation calendar. It's where we recognise the bravest of the brave. It's a fantastic event, and we hold it at the Dorchester Hotel. The Dorchester is owned by the Sultan of Brunei, and shortly before the decision was taken, the Sultan had introduced a law which meant that gay men would be stoned to death and gay women would be lashed. They'd receive lashes and corporal punishment would be brought in. Barbaric, horrific.
We're not quoting a Monty Python sketch here.
No.
This is actually happening in the 21st century.
It is.
On planet Earth.
Absolutely. And when I heard of this, you know, my own moral compass said we can't be associated with... This is not, by the way, Ian, about the staff of the Dorchester, who work at the Dorchester. Brilliant people who, you know, I've got no doubt...
Yeah.
Or devastated by what's happened. But we couldn't hold such a prestigious event at the Dorchester, and I wouldn't want either myself or my organisation to be linked to it. So we made the decision to cancel the event at the Dorchester, and we found a suitable alternative. And it's absolutely the right thing to do.
Yep. And huge support. Let's bring on this point Peggy Lamont in, as I mentioned. Peggy is a national board member and lead in equality. I've got that right, Peggy?
That's correct.
Okay, so I mean, this obviously falls into kind of territory that you are very much advocating and interested in.
It does. And what I'm really pleased about is that with absolutely no prompting as an organisation, we were able to immediately recognise that it was a vulnerability. It wasn't something that we wanted our colleagues to think that we had anything to do with or wanted in any way, shape or form. And we were quickly able to show that with action. So I'm pleased that happened, really.
In terms of, the wider question about the role, I mean, you will be aware when people hear about sort of equality roles, you know, there is a few stragglers at the back whose eyes roll and go, what's that all about, equality? Why is that important? Well, I think we sort of know why it is. How far has it all come?
Well, I think we were talking before the podcast about if you look back a period in history, you will see great changes have taken place, and equality is certainly one where, if you look 40 years in the past, I don't think anybody would have imagined we'd have been in a place we're at now. But there's still work to do. I think the recent Me Too movement, for instance, shows, you know, that we've perhaps only scratched the surface in some areas. And it just needs a voice, really. We need to make sure that those with protected characteristics are given an amplified voice to make sure that we are aware of and dealing with issues that affect people with protected characteristics on a day-to-day basis.
And is the police one of those areas? I know certainly in the area of journalism where, you know, similar conversations take place about diversity, about encouraging people from different backgrounds, because, of course, you know, if there are minority groups in whatever form who sort of often look at certain professions and think, no, that's stuffed full of sort of, you know, white blokes, and therefore straight white blokes mostly. Probably not, but that's the perception. And therefore, that's not something for me. And that's the kind of the wall you have to break down, really, isn't it? Is allowing people to realise, actually, that professions such as the police and those that are in the police is inclusive and it is, you know, beyond the stereotype of, you know, life on Mars, as it were.
Yeah, and I think there's a huge willingness within forces and within the Federation to demonstrate to people who are both looking at becoming police officers or becoming Federation representatives that we want to be as diverse as the communities we serve and the people that we're representing. But we are a way away from it. And I think all forces are making changes to try and encourage that level of diversity. And we as a Federation have taken huge steps in our last electoral process to make sure that we were as quickly representative of the people that we represent as a whole as we could be.
There will be some people listening to this saying, hang on a second, Peggy. We've got the head of state is a woman. The prime minister is a woman. Britain's top cop is a woman. What are you talking about?
Yay. Yay for positive role models. But still, we're just not there, I'm sorry. Yeah. You only need to look at the gender pay gap and the pension pay gap. Women tend to sort of plateau at a level within organisations and find it hard to progress to the top levels without usually a huge deal of sacrifice, and it shouldn't be about leaving part of yourself behind.
Yeah, I was going to, on that point, I suppose there's two things here. There's one about just getting more women into the job, mm-hmm. And then there's the what happens once you're in the job and your chances of promotion, your chances of growing, your chances of, you know, having a lifestyle choice that doesn't somehow bring your career to a crunching end just because you decided, the obvious example, to have a kid, for example. Things like that. So it's not just a case of numbers, it's what happens with those numbers.
Yeah, it's a nuanced conversation. Yeah. It's not as straightforward as just looking at figures or taking a picture and saying, well, this, you know, it's fine. It's, you know, you have to dig in deeper and find out
what's
going
on. Has it got, I mean, I'd imagine when you're in that role, or the kind of role that you do, you'd be forget. I could understand why there are probably days you think nothing is changing here. You're banging your head against a brick wall thinking, "My, you know, when you watch the telly, every senior police officer on the telly now, you know, is almost a female because drama is trying to advocate that and probably quite useful maybe to the wider conversation. But in reality, that isn't replicated anywhere near. And just because, you know, we have Cressida Dick, as I mentioned a second ago, but in fact, if you go through most police forces around the country, you won't find that sort of same seniority being taken up by females.
No, there isn't. But I think the chiefs are all aware, and I've seen it on Twitter, actually. My own chief constable from West Midlands has very strongly advocated that there must be some barrier between your average police officer and becoming a top-ranked police officer, because they know that we've got excellent people throughout the organisation of both genders, but it tends to be men that get those top posts. So they recognise that there's an issue there. It's a lot about how we fix it.
And you'd want that representation within the Federation as well.
Absolutely. And I'm really pleased that on the national board now we have the highest number of women that we've ever had. And I hope that will show that we are, you know, open and available for everybody to join us.
Why is there a, I mean, certainly in, you know, in politics, there is a, I mean, this is probably not the answer, but I certainly know that some people say, well, and it's a stereotype to the detriment of men, this, because, you know, people often say, you know, in politics, you've got to have a mad ego, you've got to be loud, you've got to be impenetrable, you've got to be unreasonable, you've got to be, you know, frankly, a little bit unhinged to want to be a politician. And that's why some women don't go in for it, because they see that and think, why? For the same reason, most men also don't go in for it. So it's a certain type of man rather than male itself as a generic term.
Honestly, most Fed reps come into being a Fed rep because they've got into trouble at some point. We've helped them out via representatives, and then they go and think, actually, I want to be able to do that for my colleagues. I don't want that to happen to somebody else. Unlike that for women, they tend to come to us because they've had some sort of discriminatory behaviour towards them, or they see unfairness within the organisation and they want to help fix that. And so that's what we want to encourage more of. But I think all the same things that play out for women in other organisations apply to women wanting to be Fed reps. They tend to be carers, they've got an awful lot that they're trying to juggle. And actually, have we looked particularly like somewhere that's a good place for women to be in the last 10 years? Maybe not.
John, did you want to come in on that?
Yeah, I think when we look at certainly women in policing, and equality is far, far broader than women in policing, and I'm sure, Peg, you'll talk about that. You look at the Metropolitan, and they are celebrating 100 years of women in policing this year. And I do think, as an organisation, we look at people like the Commissioner of the Met, you know, my Chief Constable's a female, Olivia Pinkney, you know, Prime Minister's a female. And I think then we're almost guilty of saying, oh, job complete. But it's far from that. And I always use the analogy for me that I joined 26 years ago. My tutor was a female, Jane Watts, Sergeant Jane Watts, still in the job. Brilliant, brilliant officer, an inspirational officer. It's not because she was a woman, she was inspirational. It's because she of what she went through to be where she was and the guidance that she gave me. And this is 26 years ago, which even then, you know, far fewer police women in the organisation. So strong women in policing are essential, and we are far, far better than we've ever been before. But just because we have a commissioner who's a female, just because we have some other chiefs who are females, and not many, doesn't mean to say the job's done. Far from it. And I think we're at risk of slipping back because we almost have, you know, rubbed our hands and said, haven't we done well?
Because you could have that situation. You could even have a 50-50 split in something like the Federation. But if the 50% females feel that, hang on, I'm still feeling like I'm a visitor here rather than part of it. I don't feel I'm either taken seriously. I still feel like there's an old boys club that's kind of running things in any institution. This could be anywhere. If that's the sense you have, then the job is still incomplete.
It's a journey, though. And like John says, you know, women aren't the only protected characteristic group that are struggling with very similar issues, actually.
Well, I was going to mention that about disability. And that's a really tricky one, isn't it? Because, of course, you know, is there a point, and I'm careful like how I'm even asking this question. You know, is there a point where a disability would preclude you completely for that kind of, as it would with the army or something like that? I mean, if you are, you know, if you have a certain condition, one would assume that would mean that sadly you can't join the police service.
I mean, and not in all cases. We have people join the police with disabilities, actually in quite great numbers, which might surprise people. Yep. And not only are they joining, they are flourishing. So it's important to know that you can join the police with an existing disability, or if you become disabled, join your service and absolutely find a space and a place to serve the public. But I think for disabled people, the challenges tend to be that just life is more difficult for them on a day-to-day basis. So they might be able to come into work and deliver a great service to the public, but actually when they get home at night, they're not able to do anything else except for run to bed and fall asleep the next 8 hours, and that's them done. So, and there's loads of, I mean, I could give you so much conversation around disability and policing. I think it's invisible at the moment in terms that a lot of police officers are scared to tell the organisation that they are carrying a disability because they think it might be career ending or they're worried about what will happen. And also because actually we still have quite a macho culture, regardless of gender. Police officers are expected to be over and above an average member of the public. And they're culture changes that we need to look at carefully, I think.
Is it moving in that direction? We don't hear much about this side of it. You know, you tend to think, well, either people with a disability, if it's overtly physical, would not join the police in the first place. And those that do and have a maybe not even a public facing conventional role, another role within policing, everything's OK. It's not a, you know, we talk about the gender issue more than we talk about the disability one, I would suggest.
Yeah, we do. But that's something I would really like to change.
Yeah.
Because for me, having observed policing for a long time, I think that it is people with disabilities that are afraid of what's going to happen if they fess up and say, I'm disabled. And I think it's a problem that with austerity and resourcing, we are going to fall into. And if somebody doesn't raise the alarm bells and say, actually, we need to really think carefully about how we're going to include people with disabilities, forces are going to come a cropper.
And there is, I suppose there's another kind of wider point as well about workload and demand that surrounds. I mean, John, we've spoken dozens of times on this podcast, countless times on the radio about the, you know, difficulty with the fewer police officers around, the pressure that puts on you. It's not the sort of job you leave at the door when you go home at night, particularly if you've had a pretty grisly, rough day. So all of that sort of feeds into everything we're talking about as well, doesn't it? Because, you know, you still have another statistic when you talk about women in policing. You know, if you look at, you know, who's taking care of the house and bringing up the kids, every figure, every piece of research still shows that even in a, you know, a relationship where there's a couple, the woman conventionally in that male-female relationship is doing more of that kind of heavy lifting. And so that would feed into the problems as well, wouldn't it?
It does. For women, for people with disabilities, for BAME colleagues, for people with religion that they want to be able to go and participate in at different times.
Yeah.
All of this is being impacted because of our resourcing issues. And I think chiefs know that that's the case. But it's very difficult for us to fix a problem when we haven't got the means to do it. Mm. You know, we all recognise that there's an issue there. It's just about how we're going to get it fixed.
What would you say then to, I mean, there will be people listening to this, and I kind of alluded to it a second ago, going, oh, you know, for goodness sake, can we just get the best people for the job? We don't care whether they're male, female, gay, straight, Christian, Muslim, Jew, black, white, anything at all. Just get the best person for the job and do the job. And let's, you know, quit all this, you know, messing around with, we've got to tick that box and this box. Let's just get good cops on the street.
That's what everybody wants. But I think the unseen difficulty with that is getting people to a level playing field in the first place to be able to access the roles and the jobs that they wish to do. You know, there's unseen barriers for people with protected characteristics of all protected characteristic groups that mean that they're just finding it difficult to get themselves to where they want to be. And so they end up getting discouraged and perhaps disillusioned with what they've joined to do, which is a real shame because there's so much to offer in that group of people.
And John, you're, you know, as the chair, as the national chair, do you sense things are, allowing for everything Peggy's just said, do you sense things are going in the right direction? I mean, there's clearly a lot of work to do, as there is in any organisation. And I suppose you could even unreasonably marshal an argument that says, you know, that these things will always be an ongoing issue that you've got to keep a check on.
Yeah, absolutely.
But are you sensing progress?
Yeah, I am sensing progress. And, you know, I'll be honest, Ian, it's slower than I would want. But I've taken, you know, I've taken the advice. You've got to walk before you can run. We've got a strategy now. We've got an equality lead in Peggy, who is driving the strategy. Equality runs through everything we do, and I can imagine there will be some colleagues out there who will roll their eyes when I say that. But it's true, and it's about, you know, in the workplace, colleagues who are treated unfairly, whether because they've got a disability, because of the colour of their skin, because of a hidden disability. And this is not me just saying it, this is fact, because we represent those officers. And certainly the number of people we represent through discrimination through disability is increasing significantly. And I do think that's because a lot of the forces around there, a lot of the police forces, don't really know how to deal with people. We are there to help and support as a federation. But do I think that we are moving in the right direction? Absolutely. I think we focused, understandably, on BAME officers, LGBT and women in policing. We need to make sure that we encompass all of those protected characteristics, as Peggy has said, and make sure that we work with groups. And people have said to me, well, what does good look like? I don't know. I don't know. You could say, well, good looks like maybe when you've got a black female as the national chair of the Police Federation. Yeah, that could be good. Or it could be good when we're actually treating people fairly and with dignity. And we've got a load of equality trained reps across England and Wales who are trained to the highest level. And I would encourage colleagues, if they are feeling that they're being not treated fairly, or they want advice, or they need support, then reach out. We are there to help and support.
I always like to mention, I have done already, but again, people who aren't police officers, who don't know how the Federation works, all of you guys are also serving police officers.
Yes.
You don't completely put your uniform away, John, do you? Because, you know, we know you have been, there is photographic evidence that you've actually there been is. Seen out. You've been on the beat.
And it still fits. And my mates will say to me, how many uniforms do you have?
Does it really still fit?
It does still fit. Does it? I mean, you know, it's
relatively... Is it a bit snug?
It's relatively new.
A little bit snug.
a bit snug. No, I'll tell you what, when I'm in the most privileged role, I really am. Elected by my peers, I've got a national board who support me and a national council. And just to explain, the national board are the regional reps. And people like Peggy, who's the equality lead, we have other leads. Then you've got the National Council, who are the chairs, sects, and some others from around England and Wales, from each local force. I'm in a privileged position, but what I never want to be, and I did this when I was the local chair in Hampshire, I don't want to become irrelevant. I want to really understand the issues that our members face. Sure. Now, I get emails, I get messages all the time. But when you sit alongside a colleague for 10 or 12 hours in a van with the uniform on, and I think what works for me, I mean, we're a rankless organisation, the Police Federation, but I can't escape from the fact that by rank I'm a PC. I'm very proud to be a PC. So I think when I put the uniform on, the amount of people who say, didn't realise you're a police officer. Many of my friends tell me that I've not been a police officer for many years, but put that aside. And they didn't realise the rank. And when you sit alongside people, they open up to you. They talk to you.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
It's a bit of a revelation.
So important.
You went out recently with the guys in Brixton in South London. I noticed a police officer tweeted who works in that force, why would you do that if you didn't have to?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I was invited.
You were invited.
I'll tell you what brought that about. It was an exchange on social media. And there was an officer who said some stuff which I was really inspired by. I really liked it. And I reached out, didn't know where they worked. And they asked me to go and work with them. And I said, yeah, that'd be a pleasure. Didn't realise it was Brixton in London. But went out for a shift, a late shift. And it was eye opening. I've never worked in that sort of environment. But it was talking to the officers, talking to the teams, and it was really beneficial, really beneficial.
Quite full on?
It was full on. I mean, they said to me they had a quiet shift. Blimey.
That was a quiet one.
Yeah, I mean, there was an acid attack, there was a cash in transit robbery, there was a number of other assaults, there was a few public order incidents. But there was an awful... And what I was trying to explain to the officers, they paraded with 40 40 officers for a late shift still wasn't enough for the volume they had. But when they went to a job, there was other units there with them. And I was talking to them about my own force in Hampshire. And, you know, there's been times down in the New Forest, Ian, where I've been fighting with someone. I've called for assistance. And I've been waiting for them to come from Dorset.
Wow.
You know, and when you explain that, the officers who I was with, brilliant officers, I have to say, of all ranges of levels of service, they were saying, yeah, we just can't get our heads around that because that's thankfully not what we have to put up with. And then a couple of weeks later, I was down in Devon and Cornwall working with a team down there on a late shift. Completely different pressures. But the pressure that those officers were under, the demand that they were dealing with, proportionate-wise, was exactly the same.
So depending on where you are, the demands are just absolutely slightly... They're all as intense, but they're just slightly different.
But the pressures that they're under... Yeah. And this is what I do, and it's not a gimmick. I don't always put on social media when I'm out and about on patrol. Sure. It's about making sure that I'm still relevant to the members and also that they can reach out to the National Chair. And what comes out of those visits is it's a bit like a drop in surgery. So a number of officers will come and see me during the visit and they might have issues and I will help if I can.
Perfect. That is it for this episode. Thank you, Peggy.
Thank you.
Good to see you. John, thank you as ever.
Pleasure.
We will see you on the next episode. A reminder, of course, if you have a question you want to put to John on the next programme, then make sure you follow the Police Federation on Twitter. You can also email any questions into. Absolutely important you remember you can subscribe to this podcast to make sure you get each episode automatically on your phone or your computer. Just hit the subscribe button. Now, it is, of course, free. That goes without saying, but just a reminder. And of course, you can listen via the Federation website too. Until the next time, goodbye.